The majority of them are from non-rural areas, meaning Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, the Mat-Su area.
With several races too close to call, a look at the outstanding ballots. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, November 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, seafood processors talk about the new minimum wage law.
And so we'll have people who, you know, as they retire out of the industry, we just won't replace them. Machinery will take over a lot of those jobs.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com.
The gubernatorial race is still too close to call. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports Republican incumbent Sean Parnell is trailing by 3,000 votes.
Republican gubernatorial candidates pulled off clear wins in blue states like Massachusetts and Maryland on Tuesday night. But Red Alaska could go against the trend in favor of something more purple. With all precincts reporting, unaffiliated candidate Bill Walker is taking 48% of the vote, leading Republican Governor Sean Parnell by 1 point. Alaska has never put a non-party candidate in the governor's office, and Walker's campaign has called the run historic. But at Election Central, Walker stopped short of declaring victory.
Well, we're ahead, so that's history.
Walker has previously run for office as a Republican, but renounced his party affiliation earlier this year. His running mate is Democrat Byron Mallott, who abandoned his own gubernatorial candidacy to join forces with Walker in September. At least 20,000 absentee and question ballots still need to be counted. A spokesperson for the Parnell campaign says they plan to wait for the full vote count and that any conclusions about the race would be premature. In Anchorage, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Democratic Senator Mark Begich isn't conceding, and it's likely that race won't be decided until next week. More than 22,000 ballots remain uncounted, and more are arriving in the mail. But with Sullivan ahead by more than 8,000 votes, the uncounted ballots would have to favor Begich by a huge margin if he's to stay in office. Republican Dan Sullivan was ahead almost 4 percentage points at the end of election night. He thanked supporters and told them he wasn't making a victory speech.
Door knocking, phone calls. You guys made it happen.
Begich went home before midnight saying he's hopeful his massive outreach in rural Alaska will pay off. Jim Lotsfeld ran a $10 million super PAC supporting Begich. He maintains the uncounted early and absentee votes will break their way.
Oh, it's not over. Begich has never had a result that was good for him on election night. It always goes down to the wire. And so I think in about 10 days when all the votes are counted, we'll see.
With a few candidates up and down the ballot unsure whether they won or lost, a lot of Alaskans are looking to the thousands of ballots that remain uncounted. APRN's Liz Ruskin talked with the director of the Division of Elections, Gail Fanumiai.
Fanumiai says it's too early to say exactly how many ballots are outstanding.
Right now we have in the offices throughout the state 23,608 absentee and early votes that are eligible to be counted.
She says those are from voters who live throughout the state, not in any particular district.
The majority of them are from non-rural areas of the state, meaning Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, the Mat-Su area.
But there are thousands of other kinds of ballots to be added to the total. Fanumiai is expecting several thousand questioned ballots. 4 years ago, there were 13,000, so that's her ballpark figure. Also, almost 14,000 absentee ballots were sent to voters but not yet returned. Some of those are still arriving by mail. Plus, this year, Alaska had more than 200 absentee in-person voting locations across the state.
And those ballots, we still have some of those who will still be coming back in that were probably voted within the last 5 to 6 days.
She says those are likely to number in the thousands, too. The next count will take place November 11 and again on the 14th through the 19th as needed. Once the elections are certified toward the end of the month, anyone can ask for a recount, which is free only if the results are 10 votes or 0.5% apart. Fanumiai says a few precincts had trouble getting the ballots into the voting machines this year, particularly early in the day.
The ballots are just longer. The AccuVote units were having trouble just sucking them through, or, you know, the roller heads on them to feed them through. The ones that couldn't go through went into the emergency compartment and then were fed through the unit at the end of the night by the board before they submitted their results.
Despite all the money and advertising in this election, Fanumiai says turnout appears to be lower than in previous midterms, 44% by election night, but that number will rise as more ballots come in. In Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Republican Senate majority has named a new president. Senator Kevin Meyer of Anchorage will be taking the reins from Wasilla's Charlie Huggins. Huggins will take the position of rules chair. Otherwise, the new organization is much like the old. Senator John Coghill of North Pole remains majority leader, and a number of committees are keeping the same chairs. Republicans picked up one Senate seat last night, with Mia Costello taking over the seat vacated by Democrat Hollis French, giving them 14 out of 20 seats in the state Senate. The caucus currently includes all 14 Republican members. The last Senate majority included two Democrats who serve rural areas. Dennis Egan of Juneau and Donnie Olson of Golovin were not invited to today's organization meeting. Senate President Kevin Meyer says they could still be included in the caucus.
We are having discussions with the minority, but whether or not they want to join us or we want them to join us has not been resolved yet.
With the election only yesterday, Meyer says the caucus is still working out its legislative priorities, but the state's gloomy revenue outlook is an issue the organization plans to address.
We all know what the oil prices are doing, and that we know that what we budgeted for, and that we know we're going to have a deficit. And so we're focused on budget sustainability and how we can make gradual reductions in our budgets. At the same time, they'll keep the economy strong and keep jobs and keep people employed.
Legislators may also have to deal with the question of marijuana legalization. Rules Chair Charlie Huggins says he was still perplexed that the initiative passed and that Alaska could see some legislative speed bumps, but would not elaborate further. The Senate Republicans also demurred on the question of Medicaid expansion. While the governor's race is too close to call, unaffiliated candidate Bill Walker holds a narrow lead, and he has said that his first act as governor would be to accept the federal expansion for 40,000 Alaskans. Senate President Kevin Meyer says it's too early to say what the legislature's role will be with Medicaid, and he says on other issues he's willing to work with Walker if he wins election.
You know, it doesn't matter to us who the governor is. We're going to work together with the executive branch, and we're going to do what's best for the state of Alaska.
The Republican House majority plans to hold its organization meeting tomorrow. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Aleutian Islands brace for Typhoon Nuri.
This low-pressure system is going to be the size of two-thirds of the United States.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
Voters approved ballot measure 2 last night. The measure makes legal the production, sale, and use of marijuana for Alaskans over 21 years old. Washington, D.C. and Oregon approved similar measures. Today, supporters laid out the plan for how the initiative will move forward. 90 days after the vote results are certified, the initiative becomes law, and marijuana use will no longer be a state crime. A 9-month rulemaking process follows. Campaign spokesman Taylor Bickford says this 9-month process will enable Alaskans on both sides of the legalization campaign an opportunity to weigh in on how the law should be implemented. Bickford says that will help Alaska avoid making mistakes that other states, like Washington, may have made when they wrote rules on the front end of their legalization push.
We'll have more flexibility in coming to those decisions, which I think ultimately is good, because we'll have the ability to learn from what's happened in those states, to learn from what happens in those states over the course of the next year, as opposed to if we had all of that written in at the beginning of the initiative, there would have been less flexibility and you would have been stuck with some of those decisions. It also gives Alaskans from various stakeholder groups the opportunity to engage in the process and to have a role in the process. And I think that's going to be incredibly important.
Bruce Schulte with the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation said CRCL is a group of Alaskan business leaders from across Alaska who see the new law as the start of a legitimate industry.
Just as the name would imply, the goal really is to work with the legislature and their control board and all of the other various groups on the rulemaking process, so that at the end of the rulemaking period, we've got a set of rules that make sense, that address all the concerns that folks have and allow a legitimate marijuana industry to thrive in the state.
Bickford says if the state does not set its own regulations within the 9-month window, regulatory authority would then be transferred to municipalities to implement the measure as they see fit. A plan to raise Alaska's minimum wage saw widespread support during yesterday's election. In Unalaska, at least 83% of voters approved the measure. And the seafood industry, which is the town's biggest source of minimum wage jobs, is prepared. As KUCB's Annie Ropeek reports, they're factoring in the wage hike as they look to cut costs.
Don Goodfellow is the plant manager for Alaska Seafoods in Unalaska. Leading up to the election, he says they were already planning on scaling back their workforce.
And so we'll have people who, you know, as they retire out of the industry, we just won't replace them. Machinery will take over a lot of those jobs.
Eventually, Goodfellow thinks up to 30% of Unalaska's processing workers could be automated. He says the seafood business is well overdue to make that kind of change.
Well, I think we've already started. I mean, and it's not as a response to that bill specifically. You know, it's the need to be more efficient about how we do things.
At Unicy, the biggest processing company in town, the potential wage hike just makes that need more urgent. Chris Plaisance is a human resources director for the company. If they had to implement the pay increases laid out in Tuesday's ballot initiative, he estimates it could cost up to $3.5 million.
You know, our margins are so thin that we need to make improvements or we're going to have a problem.
Unicy would need to trim its workforce, not through layoffs, Plaisance says, but through attrition, by leaving entry-level jobs empty at the end of each season. That leaves room to keep employees who've been with the company longest. Lavelle Curtis Standifer Jr. has been working for Unicy almost year-round since 2010. He's originally from Washington State.
Down the lower 48, the economy is real bad. And I thank God for the state of Alaska and how they create fishing jobs.
Standifer and many of his co-workers start out earning minimum wage, but they have ample opportunities to work overtime. Plus, they receive free room, board, and transportation from Unicy. Still, Standifer thinks his employer can afford to pay a little more.
You know, the fishing companies, they're doing quite well off our labor. That's the bottom line.
Judging by the early results, he wasn't the only one who felt that way, and he certainly wasn't the only Unicy worker at the polls. Once an hour, the processing plant trucked in employees to cast their votes and possibly set their pay. In Unalaska, I'm Annie Ropeek with help from Lauren Rosenthal.
Anchorage voters repealed AO37, a controversial labor law, during yesterday's election. They also returned many incumbents and sent some new Republicans to the state legislature. KSKA's Ann Hillman has more.
Anchorage's election sported its own special ballot measure on Tuesday. Should the municipality keep AO37, the controversial labor law created by Mayor Dan Sullivan's administration in 2013? After heavy campaigning by city labor unions against the ordinance, the community voted to repeal it. The Vote No campaign won by nearly 7,000 votes, or 54-46%. Jillian Inglis is vice president of the Municipal Employees Association and a spokesperson for the No on One campaign. She says the repeal will help employee morale and recruitment.
When you have an ordinance like this and a cloud over the city like that, and people are looking for employment, they look at what's going on in the city at the time. So they may have been looking elsewhere for employment.
Anchorage voters re-elected all House incumbents. The tightest of those races was between Representative Gabrielle Ledoux and retired Colonel Lori Hummel in House District 15 in Northeast Anchorage. Ledoux led at the end of the night with fewer than 200 votes. Two House races in West Anchorage had no incumbents. Republicans retained their hold on Mia Costello's former seat in House District 22 in Sand Lake. Republican Liz Vasquez beat Democrat Marty McGee by nearly 1,000 votes. She says she took a localized approach to get her name out there.
Concentrate on my people, concentrate on my district, put up those signs so there will be lots of name recognition. But with that, I would knock on people's door and they would say, oh, Liz, you know, it's like they kind of recognize my name.
The race for House District 21 is still too close to call. Republican Anand Dubey led for most of the evening, but when all of the precincts reported, Democrat Matt Clayman was ahead by 35 votes. Absentee question and early voting ballots could change the outcome. Republicans dominated the contested state Senate seats in the city. Republican incumbent Kevin Meyer overwhelmingly beat political newcomer Felix Rivera for Senate seat M. Senate K in West Anchorage was expected to be a tight race between Republican and former Representative Mia Costello and Democrat Claire Ross. But by the end of the night, Costello led 57-43%. Don McKenzie lives in the district and said it was a tough choice between two strong candidates.
But I know Claire, and she's done a great job, too. I think she would make an excellent representative at some spot. It's just she had a tough race running against the incumbent, and I think she showed well.
Education was a key issue in Costello's campaign, and she says she'll focus on many ways to improve the state's education system while in the Senate.
I also think that looking at the Department of Education to find out how they can serve teachers better, I would like to survey teachers and ask them what they want, or even students and ask students, what kind of a school do you want to be in? What are the things that you are motivated by?
Two experienced politicians vied for Senate District N. Democrat and former Representative Harry Crawford lost to incumbent Senator Kathy Geisel by 10% of the vote. Crawford says he's disappointed, but it doesn't mean he's out of politics.
You know, I like to watch politics and call people on it when they're not doing the right thing. So I will be watching and, like I said, holding Kathy Geisel accountable for her votes.
Geisel says she'll continue to work for her community and...
I think I'm like all the rest of the citizens in this state. They're glad it's over. Enough already.
Final results for all of the races won't be released until all of the more than 22,000 question, early, and absentee ballots are counted. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
The House District 36 race in Southeast Alaska remains too close to call after yesterday's election. Right now, Dan Ortiz, who is not affiliated with any party, has a 19-vote lead over Republican Cher Klein. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
Ortiz had been trailing by a narrow margin throughout the race, but the final precinct's numbers pushed him into that slim lead. He now has 2,608 votes compared to Klein's 2,589. The race will be decided by absentee, questioned, and early ballots, which could take a week or more. The State Division of Elections expects to certify Tuesday's election results by November 28th. Neither House District 36 candidate has held elected office before, although Klein has worked as an aide for retiring Representative Peggy Wilson of Wrangell. Ortiz is a longtime teacher in Ketchikan and says the race was challenging. Part of that challenge was running without a political party behind him.
Without the organized party behind you, you know, it was more problematic because, you know, so much more of it had to come from my team and from my volunteers, and so that was probably, you know, I didn't realize how much of a challenge it would be to run as independent.
Ortiz says he and his campaign team were very excited about the last numbers that came in late Tuesday night.
However, it's still too close to call, so we'll just have to wait until all the numbers have officially come in.
Klein agrees that the race is definitely too close to call, but says she'll be happy with whatever the voters have decided. Klein says the campaign wasn't more challenging than she expected it to be. She had been involved in campaigns previously, although this is her first bid for office.
You know, it had a few wrinkles here and there, and certainly a little different than just a straight Democrat, straight Republican ticket. But it was a lot of fun, actually. Very enjoyable.
Both candidates thanked each other for a well-run race, and we'll all wait to see what happens with absentee, questioned, and early ballots. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
The National Transportation Safety Board says a fatal Alaska State Troopers helicopter crash was caused by the pilot's decision to fly into bad weather and the agency's inadequate safety management. The trooper pilot, a state trooper, and an injured snow machiner they had picked up died in last year's crash near Talkeetna. The NTSB determined today that the pilot's motivation to complete the search and rescue mission contributed to the crash. The board also says the Alaska Department of Public Safety had a punitive culture because its internal investigation of a previous accident involving the pilot focused too narrowly on the pilot instead of addressing underlying safety deficiencies. A department statement says it has since examined its aviation practices. An Alaska-sized storm could bring high winds and destructive waves to the Aleutian Islands this weekend. Matthew Clay has been tracking the front for the National Weather Service.
This low-pressure system is going to be the size of two-thirds of the United States.
Right now, Typhoon Nuri is churning off the coast of Japan. It's been downgraded from a superstorm, but Clay says it's going to gather force once it hits the jet stream and starts traveling across the Pacific Ocean.
And as this happens, we're looking at low to undergo some rapid cyclogenesis, which basically means it's going to deepen very quickly, become much stronger, and it's going to produce the potential for hurricane force winds across the western Aleutians.
They'll make landfall on Friday with gusts of up to 100 miles per hour expected west of Kiska. By Saturday, Adak and Atka could see gusts of up to 80 miles per hour and seas up to 50 feet. The storm's not expected to have the same impact in Unalaska. Clay's predicting lighter winds, which should be blocked by the island's topography. A 65-year-old deer hunter was injured and needed a medevac after he was attacked by a sow bear on an island near Kodiak yesterday afternoon. Sitka resident Michael Snowden suffered injuries to his legs. His hunting partner Jeff Ostrin, age 38 of Camas, Washington, was not injured. According to Kodiak fish and game biologist Nate Savoda, a sow bear with two older cubs was involved in the attack.
They were dragging the deer out down to the beach to be picked up, and they stopped to take a quick break for lunch. And at that point, they heard a bear, or what they believed was a bear, rustling in the brush. They reached over, grabbed their rifles, and moments later, a bear charged through the brush and jumped on the survivor, and continued to thrash around with him. The witness obviously startled, backed up a few feet, took aim at the bear, and waited till he had a clear shot.
At that point, one of the cubs came out of the brush and was also shot by Ostrin. The second young bear is expected to survive the killing of its mother. Larry Van Dale, the regional fish and game supervisor and noted bear expert, said the bears smelled the dead deer from afar and came looking for a meal.
The bears winded the deer several hundred yards away. The skipper of the boat actually watched that from a distance. And, like I say, these guys are in a real brushy area. They're dragging a deer that has been gutted right behind them. And when the bears winded the deer, they started coming toward that direction, continuing to follow the scent.
The initial report said the attack was by five bears, which Vandale says is highly unusual for the normally solitary animals.
Yeah, that would pretty much have to be a sow with four cubs, big cubs, which we've seen only, I think, once or twice in my career to keep that many cubs that long.
Vandale called Ostrin a hero because he killed the bear, tended to his hunting partner's wounds, and got help. The alpine ski area Skiland, north of Fairbanks, made news last month when a mineral exploration project threatened to take over some of its trails. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Freegold Ventures has agreed to exclude Skiland trails from Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority acreage, where the company is seeking to expand an exploration lease. That averts one problem, but the popular community ski area is for sale, and Skiland Incorporated spokesman Jeff Fay says the license required to operate trails on Trust Authority property is an impediment to selling.
That license agreement is revocable at any time by the Mental Health Trust, and so that's a little bit of a variable or an uncertainty for a potential buyer, and so we're going to try to see if we can work something out that's a little more concrete and a little more long-term.
Fay says Skiland officials were scheduled to meet with the Trust Authority Monday to talk about the license agreement. A local family that's long operated ski land under lease plans to make this their last season, and Faye says the ski land board favors selling.
At this point, we don't have anybody standing in the wings asking to lease ski land, and the board generally is in a position where they would like to move away from ski land and hand it off to someone younger and more energetic, essentially.
The Skiland Lodge buildings, a residence, a chairlift, and the 80 acres they sit on are for sale for $350,000. Faye says several buyers have expressed interest, but did not rule out the possibility that the area could be run as a co-op.
If we're unable to find the buyer, then the board may take it upon themselves to develop some sort of an organization to keep Skiland going.
Faye says keeping up yearly certification of the area's chairlift is essential, as it's been grandfathered in under old rules, and if certification lapses, it could have to meet current safety requirements, a potential stumbling block. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Annie Ropeek and Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, Jay Barrett in Kodiak, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez and Liz Ruskin reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Raven Alaska, navigating Alaska's challenging terrain, serving more than 100 communities statewide. Details at raven.com. Raven Alaska, soaring above. Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. And by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Salmon are all around us. They're in our rivers and our freezers. They fuel our economies and keep Alaskans connected to our traditions, our families, and our friends. The Salmon Project celebrates all the ways salmon are interwoven with our Alaskan lives. Learn more about the project and find out how you can be involved at salmonproject.org or find them on Facebook. Salmon, it runs deep in all Alaskans. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.